Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Tonight at 9 p.m., the presidential candidates, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney and President Barack Obama, will face off at the University of Denver in the first of three debates, this one to be moderated by PBS NewsHour executive editor Jim Lehrer. You can join 89.7 NPR News and WOSU-TV for live coverage. And for more election coverage, you can visit WOSU.org/campaign2012 for the latest NPR, PBS, and WOSU newsroom. The presidential election of 1960 marked a pivotal moment when the introduction of live broadcast television proved a game changer for the Republican Vice President Richard Nixon.
The first question to Senator Kennedy from Mr. Fleming.
Senator, the vice president in his campaign has said that you are naive and at times immature. He has raised the question of leadership. On this issue, why do you think people should vote for you rather than the vice president?
Well, the vice president and I came to the Congress together. 1946, we both served in the Labor Committee. I've been there now for 14 years, the same period of time that he has. So that our experience in government is comparable. Secondly, I think the question is, what are the programs that we advocate?
That was then Democratic Senator John F. Kennedy who kicked off the debate and by most measures won the debate. So the question now today in this day and age is social media the new television that could prove a game changer for this debate season, or will it be the new format the debate will take? Here to preview tonight's presidential debate is veteran and retired journalist and writer Bill Hershey. Bill, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you for sitting between our other two guests.
Yes.
Democratic strategist and liberal think tank Innovation Ohio's communications director Dale Butland. Dale, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann.
And also Republican strategist Terry Casey. Welcome, Terry.
Good morning, Ann.
Jim Lehrer has said the topic for the six blocks of the debate are economy, health care, and the role of government and governing. So when it's broken down into six blocks, and it's do you think that it will actually end up being economy, health care, the role of government and governing, or will it be just a flat-out economy? Bill Hershey?
I think it will be the economy for the most part, but we have to remember in these debates the participants frequently answer the specific question as quickly as they can and then go on to try to make whatever point it is they're trying to make. But I think particularly with Governor Romney, he wants to talk about the economy and his plans for seeing himself as better suited to create the jobs that the country needs.
And I think the good news people need to remember, it's an hour and a half tonight. Of course, that might be good or bad, depending upon how much you like all the minutiae and talking points on both sides. But we've got two other presidential debates plus one for the vice president. So four debates total is a pretty good number. And we'll have, I think, foreign policy is going to be one of the focuses of another one. And forget the other one. They got some kind of Twitter or email in questions. I forget exactly how that one's going to work, but there'll be lots of debates and lots of time.
Yeah, well, except history shows that the only one that really matters is the first debate. That's when you're going to have your largest television audience, somewhere on the order of, I think, 65 million people is what they're suggesting for tonight. Unless something major happens in this debate, which I don't anticipate will happen, typically what happens for subsequent debates is that the listenership and viewership falls off.
And I think that the economy has been the overriding issue in the campaign, and Dale is correct. The first debate always seems to make the most difference. But there's one thing going on in the world right now. We're in sort of an unpredictable time, international relations. We have the Benghazi situation in Libya. The Obama administration seems to not want to talk too much about what happened there. They said it's undergoing a criminal investigation or something, so they can't talk about it. But if something like that happens again just before the foreign affairs debate, that debate could take more importance than it normally would take.
And the other thing that people might want to look at, it's partly about the issues and the substance. And a lot of people tuning in are locked in and have their opinions already. But a lot of it also is about the personality and the style of the candidates. Al Gore in 2000, I don't know how much of it was the debate itself or the Saturday Night Live parodies they did later about his size and kind of acting uninteresting. But some of the personality aspects of how they handle things, good and bad, for both candidates will be important.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you'd like to join the conversation with veteran political journalist and writer Bill Hershey, Dale Butlin, Democratic strategist, and Republican strategist Terry Casey, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can check out our Facebook page, post your question or comment there. But Dale, go ahead.
Yeah, so what I was going to say is that for all the Sturm und Drang that you hear in the news media, and obviously everyone's trying to gin up the audience, the truth is, the dirty little secret of politics is that debates rarely change the direction of an election. As a matter of fact, in my lifetime, with the exception of Nixon Kennedy in 1960 and possibly Reagan Carter in 1980, although I even have some doubt about that one, I can't think of a single presidential race that's been much affected by the debates. Typically, viewers come out of the debate backing the same candidate they back going into it. And I just mentioned, with regard to Terry's comment a moment ago, that Al Gore business, yeah, everybody thought Al Gore blew the debate, but he ended up winning the popular vote. These things typically do not change the direction of an election.
Let's listen to that 1960 debate, right? I think that's what we have coming up. Yeah. Let's listen to that.
I can only say that my experience is there for the people to consider. Senator Kennedy's is there for the people to consider. As he pointed out, we came to the Congress in the same year. His experience has been different from mine. Mine has been in the executive branch. His has been in the legislative branch. I would say that the people now have the opportunity to evaluate his as against mine, and I think both he and I are going to abide by whatever the people decide.
Okay, so Ohio still ended up voting for Nixon despite his poor debate performance, and even those within his own political party said it was poor. What I wanted to get at is, you know, the issue of can a debate really change a presidential race? In the Dispatch today, they noted that despite his sickly appearance in that debate with Democrat John Kennedy, GOP candidate Richard Nixon didn't do so badly. In the final tally, though, Kennedy won by about 120,000 votes, and I wonder— could it have been those, but could those have been the voters turned off by Nixon or conversely turned on by Kennedy, so to speak? In other words, we're talking about a very narrow band of voters this time as well.
Well, first off, back in those days, you have to remember, only about half the audience watched it on TV.
Because
a large number of people listened to it on radio. Okay. And in fact, of the people listening to it on radio, the consensus was Nixon probably won the debate. But of those people who watched on television, they believed Jack Kennedy won the debate. But the broader point is this. What were the polls going into that debate? Showed it very, very tight. And that's exactly the way it ended up coming out of the debate. Gallup, George Gallup, the pollster, has looked back at decades of his polling data and has concluded if you want to know how a race will look after the debates, take a look at what the race looked like before the debates. In other words, the needle rarely moves.
I think also you made a good point, Ann, that Kennedy won the debate but lost Ohio. And that just shows that, as Dale has said, there are other factors that are as important or more important than the debate. That 1960 election in Ohio was considered a kind of a political masterpiece for Ray Bliss, who was the Ohio chairman then, in terms of get out the vote and that kind of thing. And those factors are still important today in an expanded way with all the social media that we have. So the debates will come and go. But as we approach Election Day, all those other things that determine who wins the state will still be important.
And speaking of coming and going, because of our social media abilities today, because of YouTube and that sort of thing, nothing comes and goes anymore. It's with us forever. We can go back and check it out whenever you want. Even the half the people who were able to watch it on television or listen to it on the radio only had that one shot at it. Big difference.
Well, good or bad, we might see more of it that we like. And I'm going to half agree with Dale. A lot of the debates do end up, because each candidate's carefully trained and practiced to do their talking points. But there have been some debates in Dale's lifetime. Dukakis, when he got the death penalty question from Bernie Shaw, and in my most people's view, he kind of fumbled that question. George Herbert Walker Bush in 92 when he was looking bored and watching his watch. So there are things that can hurt you, things that can help you. And if you actually look, and this is from hardly a right-wing source, the Boston Globe did a story yesterday that detailed in 02 when Romney was running for governor, he was way behind, but the debates helped him very significantly. He was running against the state treasurer in Massachusetts, come from way behind in order to win that governorship.
Just for people, the Dukakis question was, if somebody murdered and I think raped your wife, Would you be favored the death penalty for them? And he didn't think very long about it before saying no, that he still would be opposed to the death penalty.
Well, I mean, the problem was is that he didn't demonstrate any humanness. I mean, it was sort of this robotic reply. And that, coincidentally, is one of the things Romney has to avoid tonight. He can't look like Romney-zoid again. He's got to demonstrate some human qualities, which so far have been lacking.
And I don't think we have to go back to some of the historical debates that Terry cited. My lifetime's even longer than Dale's. But the Republican candidate, Governor Romney, dug himself a big hole in the Republican primaries with his $10,000 bet. Even Dale, who's a shrewd gambler, I'm not sure would bet $10,000 on national television against someone if he was trying to come across as a regular guy.
Point being that that's a gaffe. That was supposed to come across as funny and humorous, and his kind of funny and humorous. And the funny humor thing, there's a real fine line between coming across like he did, which was not good, and being funny like, say, I guess I've always loved the response from Reagan.
I won't use my opponent's youth and inexperience against them in 84.
Let's listen to it. This is Reagan to Mondale. When the latter made the reference to his opponent's race, Mondale had quipped something like, his opponent's ideas were too old, and in response,
I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit, for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience.
Yeah, but, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, okay? Yes, that was a terrific zinger, but let's remember what happened that fall. Reagan won 49 states. This was a blowout before that, and I find it hard to believe that that zinger was what allowed Reagan to win 49 states.
But he didn't come across, he came across as funny without being
condescending
or mean-spirited, I think was the point I was trying to make. It didn't hurt him.
Yeah, well, no, that's true, and that's one of the things in, you know, Romney's campaign staff has been quoted the last week or so saying that they have prepared Romney with a bunch of zingers, as they've described it, zingers.
Yeah, right.
And the what Romney has to be careful of is that if you come across with pre-prepared zingers, sometimes it looks scripted, it looks phony, it looks stale, and that can backfire on you, actually.
I think Dale makes a good point. All of us knew Ronald Reagan, at least as a political person. Ronald Reagan, or Mitt Romney, is no Ronald Reagan when it comes to zingers. I don't think that there's any way that he could do things. Reagan's appeared to be spontaneous. I'm not sure there were.
Well, I was thinking about that. I can't imagine it really was spontaneous, in quotation marks. However, they probably left it to his devices about when and if he should use it, and he didn't. Didn't feel pressured. It didn't sound pressured that, you know, that he used it under any kind of pressure.
And to add a little historical perspective, in 84, people forget that in February of 84, Ronald Reagan trailed both John Glenn and Walter Mondale in February by 10 points. And as we went into that last month or two, the election was still touch and go. And Mondale definitely had a chance of winning. I mean, later, ultimately, it became a blowout on Election Day. But there were people in 84 saying, oh, Reagan's too old. The economy wasn't very good. It wasn't the blowout all through the campaign that it ended up being on Election Day.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. We are talking about, we're previewing the debate tonight. If you're into it, want to give us a call and tell us what you think, what your expectations are. Coming up, I'm going to ask our Democrat and our Republican what they think the strong and weak points are of the opponent and of their own candidates. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Be sure to join 89.7 NPR News and WOSU-TV for the first presidential debate tonight at 9. From the University of Denver, the debate will focus on domestic policy and will be moderated by Jim Lehrer of the PBS NewsHour. It's the first presidential debate, and it's tonight at 9. You can listen here on 89.7 NPR News or watch on WOSU-TV. 64 degrees with cloudy skies, a high near 72 today. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 52. Sunny and actually warm on Thursday, a high of 78. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More details about the programs and upcoming information sessions are online at glenn.osu.edu. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're previewing the presidential debate tonight at 9 p.m. You can join 89.7 NPR News and WOSU-TV for the first presidential debate from the University of Denver. The debate will focus on domestic policy. It will be moderated by Jim Lehrer of PBS NewsHour. For more election coverage, you can visit our website at WOSU.org/campaign2012 for the latest from NPR, PBS, and the WOSU Newsroom. In the studio with me right now, veteran political journalist and writer Bill Hershey. Bill, once again, thanks for joining us today.
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you.
On either side, Dale Butland, Democratic strategist. Dale, once again, thanks.
Always a pleasure.
And Terry Casey, Republican strategist. Terry, thanks a lot.
Thank you. It's fun.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you guys to, Terry, I wanted to ask you to tell me what the strengths are of Barack Obama going into this. What advantages does he have going into this debate tonight? And then conversely, Dale, after that, ask you what strengths and what does Mitt Romney bring into the table tonight?
Well, the president is the president, which gets a certain degree of respect. He's obviously, from his education, his law professor background, being president, and he was very good in the debates with Hillary Clinton back in 08, had a lot of those. So he's clearly very calm, very smooth. He's very knowledgeable. I think the biggest weakness, and if Romney's effective, it's what he's going to talk about, is what is the record in office?
So it's going to be the substance.
Well, I think if Romney can work it right and the questions come out, there really is a question. Okay, you've had 4 years as president. What did you promise in running for president? What have you accomplished? And that's the big thing that he's got to answer. Are the public comfortable with 4 more years of what we've had during the last 4 years? And I loved Joe Biden yesterday when he was talking about the middle class being oppressed during the last 4 years.
Dale, you agree with that summation of the president's advantages going into it, or does he have maybe something to lose?
Well, in part, yeah. I mean, certainly Terry has identified some. I think the biggest thing the president has is his enormous likability. I mean, the polls are showing that there is a likability gap between Romney and the president of something like 25-30 points. I mean, that's huge. People like President Obama. They've gotten to know him for 4 years. They think he's a nice person. They think he's a good family man, all those kinds of things. So he's got that going in. You asked about Romney's strengths. I presume you'd like me to answer that.
Now I want you to get to Romney's strengths, right?
Yeah, well, he's a very good debater. And he's had a lot of experience.
And a lot of practice just
he's
in the last year.
He's had a lot of experience because mm-hmm. of the, I don't know, were there 12 Republican debates?
I think there were 22.
22 Republican debates. So he's had a lot more experience more recently than President Obama has had in a debate. The last time he debated was against Hillary Clinton when he was running for the presidency. Governor Romney also, of course, has a successful career as a business person, made a lot of money doing that, and I presume that's one of the things he'll try to say tonight is that I have this experience, I know how to turn things around, and I can do it here. The problem he's got, though, I think Governor Romney's got, is that the economy and the fact that this is a very long recession, you know, the recovery has been slower than any of us would like. But the problem for Romney is he's got to demonstrate he's got some new ideas that can pull us out of that situation. But when you look at his plan, there's nothing new there. It's a reprise of the same policies that George W. Bush put forward, namely the tax cuts for the wealthy, the deregulation of Wall Street. He'll repeal Obamacare. It's the same thing
so
that got
again,
us into this mess.
It'll go back to substance then. They both are going to come across okay, all things being equal, Bill Hershey.
I'm not sure. I think they might, and I think substance is always important, but each of my colleagues here has made the point that President Obama is president. And if I were a Romney supporter, I would be concerned about all this emphasis on zingers, because other than the Obama haters, who are very well defined, President Obama is well liked. He is the president. If there's an effort to belittle him and it's done clumsily, I think that will backfire on Governor Romney. But this is a big opportunity for him because he is on an equal level with the President of the United States. And if he handles himself well and does some of the things Terry said he should do, that gives him an opportunity. But he doesn't want to appeal just to the Obama haters. He already has them. And if he wants to zing, 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 that'll just reinforce their support for him. But I'm not sure it will get those 5 undecided voters who are still out there somewhere in the country.
One other thing to watch for is during the presidential primaries earlier this year, and it was fascinating because you had 7 or 8 people and some people pretty articulate, some like the Texas governor that weren't quite as good at this kind of thing. But that was kind of like 6-7 people against one because Romney was generally the leader and everybody tried to attack him. So being one-on-one and also with just one person asking the questions is a little different dynamic. And for an Ohio interest, Rob Portman has been playing Barack Obama in kind of getting Romney ready. So the practice and getting used to the format, the timing, how you work it out is an interesting challenge.
You guys have both consulted on prepare and helped people prep for these for big debates. I know, Terry, you've been a sit-in person. Who did you play?
I was Ted Strickland against John Kasich,
okay,
and I did a pretty good job as Ted Strickland.
I doubt that.
But the point I would ask is, to what extent do you prep and how can you prep a candidate when there's this kind of pressure on to read the room? How do they hear what's going on as they're saying it? Do they get the feeling when they come off that stage, are they oblivious to what's happened, or do they have a feel for what they've done?
Well, I wouldn't say that they're oblivious, but as you say, worked with a lot of candidates. I've actually been involved in a lot of debates myself. Last year, for example, during the issue 2 fight over the collective bargain thing, I did I think 8 debates, 4 of which were televised. And what I can tell you from personal experience is that when you come off, you're never quite sure. You have a general feel for how you did. But when you're in the moment, it's very difficult, I think, to step back and try to dope out what the average viewer or listener has heard. And so I tend to like to listen to people who have been outside telling me how they thought things went. And I think it's true for the candidates I've worked for as well. They oftentimes don't have a real sense.
And another thing in the debates that's very important, and I told this to John Kasich and the others in getting prepared, people forgot Ted Strickland was trained as a psychologist, a Methodist minister. He's a very good listener and actually a very good debater. And part of the thing in a debate, you have to be listening what the other person is saying, because if they make a little slip or a little gaffe, you want to be able to appropriately jump on it. But then you've also got to be thinking about what you're going to say. And then you've got to figure out if it's 90 seconds, you want to kind of say your message, maybe do a little backfill on some other question earlier that you didn't completely do, and then you've got to finish smoothly at the end, because some people, they'll see the sign that says time up, and they'll just stop.
Yeah,
and then it seems kind of thuggy or sluggish if you don't end your final point correctly.
I think Terry made a very, very good point there. Counterpunching is what's really important. In my view, that's where you win or lose debates, is on your ability to counterpunch.
How respond.
It's like lawyers, you know, they say they earn their money during cross-examination, right? It's not on the direct examination. Anybody can do that. It's listening to what the other guy says and then finding an opening. Counterpunching is crucial, and I think it'll play a big role tonight.
Right, and Dale and I agree 100% on this. We're going to shock Bill and Ann that
Bill's
we're
speechless.
Agreeing 100%.
I think you do agree with each other, but I'd like to ask each of them, what's the sense when it's the president of the United States you're counterpunching? In the Republican primary debates, it was a slugfest. You could say anything you wanted about any of them. What's a line you have to be careful about crossing?
I think Dale touched on it early. You are against the president of the United States. Everybody's watching. And style and substance are both important, because if you get too over the top, as happens on both sides on cable TV at times, they don't want to hear shouting and screaming. They want to know how solid, how good is this person? Because if you've got to go up against Putin in Russia or the leader in China or other people, can you forcefully articulate our viewpoint, but also be appropriately respectful? Because in the world environment, it's different. And also with Congress. I mean, if you're a president, we don't have an absolute ruler. You've got to work with Congress. You've got to get them, people on both sides, to go along with you. And so what kind of leader are you? How can you articulate and sell your viewpoint?
2 points. First, the reason that historically challengers have gotten a little bump out of the debate is just by virtue of the fact he's standing on the same stage with the president of the United States.
It elevates him on America.
Gives him some stature. Mm-hmm. So that's true. Now, but here, this is another one of those really awkward things. Mitt Romney has to go on the attack because he has to puncture the president's lead in the polls. He has to puncture the president's likability. But as we just discussed a little while ago, Romney has this likability gap. When you're on the attack, sometimes it's very hard to improve your own likability or, in fact, keep from damaging your own likability. And yet Mr. Romney and his aides seemed intent on going on the attack, whether it's to appease the right-wing base or whether it's to chip away at the president's likability. But it's a very fine line.
And how, you know, when we get back to the undecided voters, how does Mitt Romney appeal to them without turning off his very conservative base that put him there in the first place? I'm interested, Bill Hershey, in what you think about that.
I think that's a great question, because I see just now Governor Romney is for President Obama's executive order on this limited amnesty
for the children of
illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if he starts talking about things like that during the debate. I don't think the people who support him will support President Obama, but they might not vote. That was a concern early on among some Republicans
that might dampen the enthusiasm. So I think a lot riding on enthusiasm right now.
Right, but one of the things that us pros in the game, you look at county by county, who is voting, requested absentee ballots, how many R's, how many D's, and I know in the past few days I've talked to people, Cuyahoga County, Summit County, and one of the encouraging signs, there's a lot of, as happened in the 2010 election, there's a lot of motivation and fire on the Republican side, just as Obama benefited from in 08. And earlier, I want to agree with Dale, it does help the challenger to be on that same platform, but you do have to be very careful, because you don't want to go over the top in terms of what you do.
I want to go back to something that Bill said a moment ago, because I think it's important. I think that a large part of Mitt Romney's problem has been the base of the Republican Party, which is extremely conservative, far more conservative than the average American is, and certainly far more conservative than the average swing voter is. And yet, my own personal thing is that Mitt Romney is probably a closet moderate. That's really what I think he is.
Given
his record and all the positions that he's taken previously. He was for abortion rights. He was for gay rights. He was for health care. Let's face it, he was the father of Obamacare. It was called Romney Care in Massachusetts. But every time Romney has tried to pivot back to the center, whether it's on this limited amnesty thing for the children of immigrants, or whether it just recently on the health care thing, where he said, well, I like some of the pieces of health care, I'd like to keep it. There was a firestorm of criticism from the right wing.
But during the primary, that was a lot more dangerous than it is now in the general election.
Well,
right?
Except for the fact that this is a base election. What this is about turning out your base. This is not a persuasion election. This is a classic mobilization election. And the danger for Romney is if he ticks off that base, they're not going to show up, or they won't show up with the kind of enthusiasm that there was before.
Well, I disagree with Dale. I think it's partly about turning out the base, but I think the Republican base is very fired up, and I want to give full credit to President Obama. The $16 trillion deficit, all the problems internationally, Obamacare, everything like that. But a lot of it's also about the persuadable middle. When you go back to that Boston Globe article I mentioned earlier, Romney was not doing well in the governor's race in 2002, especially with women. He was running against a female candidate, but as they saw him more in the debates, that the women audience moved and shifted. He still lost women, but the margin was a lot narrower. Same thing happened with George Bush in 2004. There was a gender gap earlier, but it narrowed as things got closer to election day.
Everything narrows as you get closer to election
day. It does, and let's remember, each election is unique. This is not the 2002 gubernatorial race in Massachusetts. President Obama is president. He's skilled at this sort of thing. But on the other hand, I think some of what Dale said, we might think a president is invincible. You can't say anything about him without some backlash. You played several takes from President Reagan. I still remember his debate with President Carter, I think, in the first Reagan election. And I think his line was, "There you go again."
Yes, there you go
again.
And
that was a terrific line. It wasn't disrespectful the way he said it. I don't know if Governor Romney is capable of producing a line like that. Maybe he is, because we know that in the Republican primary debates, Romney got better. I thought he was terrible the first few debates I saw, but who would have ever thought he would have taken out Newt Gingrich as he did?
Before we take a quick break from Dustin on Facebook, he says, "I just have a hunch that Mitt Romney won't be making any $10,000 wagers. So perchance he will have won." We have to take a quick break. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Neil Conan from Talk of the Nation and NPR News. Ohio's a very important swing state in the 2012 presidential election.
As always.
So important, in fact, that Ken Rudin and I will visit WOSU to host the Political Junkie Roadshow. Join us Wednesday, October 10th at 7 p.m. on the Ohio State campus for an evening of politics, punditry, and, of course,
trivia questions, and don't forget, T-shirts.
And a few bad jokes. Visit WOSU.org/politicaljunkie to register for this free event.
Bad jokes?
This is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes, Hour 2 of All Sides begins. What makes a Buckeye fanatic? Today, we'll consider the history of fans of Ohio State football in a conversation with Columbus Dispatch sports columnist and author Bob Hunter about his new book. That discussion from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. Cloudy skies today, a high of 72, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 52 degrees, sunshine and a high of 78 on Thursday. Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Symphony, launching their new season with music director Jean-Marie Zaituni leading the Columbus Symphony and Chorus in Beethoven's uplifting Ninth Symphony, Friday, October 5th at the Ohio Theater. Tickets and more information at columbussymphony.com. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're doing a preview of the debate tonight. I know you're going to want to watch it. If you want to just listen, you can join us on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be airing the presidential debate tonight at 9 p.m. from the University of Denver. You'll also be able to watch it on WOSU-TV. The debate's supposed to focus on domestic policy. It'll be moderated by Jim Lehrer of PBS NewsHour. For more coverage, go to WOSU.org/campaign2012 for the latest from NPR, PBS, and the WOSU newsroom. I want to, we were talking about those one-liners, those great one-liners, and I guess I really didn't plan it this way, but I have another one from Ronald Reagan, and I pulled this one because it's being recycled so heavily in this election. He was it was when the country in 1980 was in the throes of the Iran hostage situation. There was a serious energy crisis. Let's listen to that.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Is it easier for you to go and buy things in the stores than it was 4 years ago? Is there more or less unemployment in the country than there was 4 years ago?
Okay, so sounds familiar. President Obama's first 4 years have been compared to Reagan's, and the current president has oftentimes taken a cue from the popular president. Is it the same message, different party, and will it be effective? Dale Butland?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, first of all, you got to remember, in 1980, we had double-digit inflation, double-digit interest rates. OPEC had been formed during Carter's presidency, and oil prices literally quadrupled overnight. But look today, where we were 4 years ago, as opposed to right now. When President Obama walked in and raised his right hand and took the oath of office in January of 2009, we lost almost 800,000 jobs that month. That month. Now we've had 30 consecutive months of private sector job growth. Yes, it hasn't been as quickly as it hasn't been as quick as everyone would like. But remember, Barack Obama has created. There's been more jobs created in the private sector under Barack Obama in 4 years than there was under George W. Bush in 8 years. So when people say, "Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?" Absolutely. We were on the cusp of another Great Depression 4 years ago. We're not there now. We are on the right track. Polls are indicating people feel more optimistic about the future.
And yet, Bill Hershey, people keep uttering that.
It's still a good question because a good answer to it is it could have been worse, or we're a little bit better off. And all the statistics Dale said are correct, but President Obama has a little bit of the same problem that Governor Strickland had in 2010. The slogan of his campaign is, it could have been worse, because I think Governor Strickland was a pretty good steward of Ohio's economy and government during a really bad time. President Obama has had two more years and things have gotten a little bit better, but the feeling is improving in the country. But people still don't feel like these are the Bill Clinton or the Ronald Reagan good times.
Exactly. People want to go back to the 80s. They don't want to go back to pre-2008. They want to go back to the 80s, you know.
Well,
the late 80s, early 90s, early, I should say. Yeah, right.
And Dale was running off all these statistics. Supposedly everything's fine. He forgets we've had 43 months of unemployment being higher than 8%. And yes, it's come down a little bit because so many people have given up looking for jobs. And the national debt, we're at $16 trillion. It took 220 years, all the presidents in America, to get it to 11. Suddenly this guy comes in 4 years, he takes it from 11 trillion up to 16 trillion.
But that doesn't go to the question of, are you better off?
Well, then
if you look at
median household income has fallen by $4,500 a family. And so families in general feel very pressed, and you add in the gas prices. I filled up the gas pump last night, and it was not pretty.
Terry's complaint seems to be reduced to its essence. Barack Obama hasn't cleaned up the Republican mess quickly enough.
Well,
right? That seems to be the essence of his complaint. And all I can tell you is, when you look at the polling data, I mean, we don't have to speculate here. There's lots of polling data out there which shows, who do people hold responsible for the current economic situation? It's not Barack Obama. It's George W. Bush.
And Congress.
No. I'll show you poll after poll after poll where people hold George W. Bush responsible. Now, that's not enough for Obama to simply say, well, it was all his fault. But the point is, the polls show people are feeling better about where the economy is going. And they think, I believe, and the reason Obama's got a lead, is they think if we just give him a little more time, we're on the right track, we're going in the right direction.
I think it depends on who you are, how you answer that question. In 1980, a whole lot of people answered that question, no. If you're an auto worker in Ohio or someone in a job related to the auto industry, despite what Governor Kasich keeps saying that the auto bailout had no effect and we're actually down in auto jobs, you are better off, or you feel better off than you were not maybe 4 years ago, but when General Motors and Chrysler were about to go bankrupt. So there's no categorical or simple answer to that question as there was in 1980. And I do think, Dale, that people don't like Congress very much either. Maybe they don't blame Congress as much as they blame President Bush, but Congress's approval ratings are abysmally low.
Oh,
also,
you're absolutely right.
And Dale forgot to mention some of the problems that happened under George Bush go back like to 1999, the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act that Bill Clinton signed into law. Some of the financial deregulation
that Congress passed before he signed it into
law. Absolutely, Congress and
led
Bill
by
Clinton.
The Republicans. Okay. Come on, Terry.
Bill Clinton signed it.
But who proposed it?
Okay, let's
the
not.
Republicans.
You know what? Let's talk. Let's get back to debate.
Yes.
You know, debate.
It is, I know, but not you guys debating.
For an email from Mike. He said, why are they bothering to have three debates? Or perhaps the better question, why not have the debates sooner? Early voting has already started. We need these debates to help people decide sooner. Bill Hershey, how do you respond to that?
I think that's a great question.
I do
because
too.
I was just thinking, as we talked about this, early voting's already started. I hope to get my absentee ballot today or tomorrow. The whole election cycle has changed with early voting. The debate cycle hasn't caught up with it yet. I don't know. I don't have any pull with the National Commission on Debates to bring this about. But maybe for the next presidential election, there will be at least one debate before the—
Well, maybe the problem is that it's the candidates that drive the debate schedule ultimately, right?
Well, and candidates on both sides, on purpose, you don't want too many debates literally in the last week before the election, so you want to space them out. But the reality is a lot of people are going to be getting absentee ballots at home, like Bill will or like my wife will. But the studies show that not everybody gets it on day one immediately, votes in return, because a lot of people like to get it, study the issue, study some of the other candidates, and a lot of times it's a week or 2 weeks before they actually return it.
Let's bring your folks into this and the news media.
The news media.
There's only one reason that I can see that this evening's debate might, and I emphasize might, change the campaign narrative, and that's because the media would love to write that story. In today's 24/7 spin cycle, storylines
24/7, 21-minute spin cycle.
Yeah. Well, what I mean is 24 hours a day, seven days a week. Storylines stale very, very quickly. The Obama surge is already a month old, that story is. So if Romney holds his ground and maybe delivers a couple of memorable lines or zingers, at least half the stories tomorrow are going to include the word comeback in there because the media, above all else, wants a race. And so I think that there's some reasonable chance that, you know, the media is going to be looking for any way they can to get that race.
The media wants a good story. If Romney stumbles badly tonight, there will be headlines that say that, or if the president stumbles badly. I think the media, we are formerly a media member, but the media has changed, too. It's not just television, radio. It's all the social media. So whatever happens, they're going to be some of the lines like Dale said, and I don't know, they'll be on Twitter or Facebook and so
Xbox.
Forth.
Xbox.
Yeah, all
Xbox
that.
Is going to be fascinating. I'm going to watch it on Xbox to watch how people are responding. They're going to
right
have,
away.
They're going to have real-time numbers ticking off about whether people liked what he said, whether they didn't like what he said. I'm not quite sure what it's going to look like exactly, but I'm going to be watching it because I'm interested in that. That's going to get me interested in it because I'm going to be able to see what people are saying.
And I'm going to put in a plug for Saturday Night Live and some of the comedians because they obviously, we know David Letterman hates Romney and loves Obama, but Jay Leno is a lot fairer in terms of his comments on both sides. But Saturday Night Live, I think, does a very good job of poking good holes at both candidates on both sides.
Or The Daily Show or The Colbert
Absolutely.
Report.
Absolutely.
Or really Fox News, which I think is the most humorous of all.
From
Not
a listener,
to mention MSNBC.
let's hear from Rick. We've gotten, I think this is our first call. Rick from Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Hi, thank you. First, some feedback. I don't want to hear the guests already debating the issues.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks, Rick.
I'm an Obama supporter. I care for Romney, but I think I'm trying to be kind of objective in this question.
Uh-huh.
I'm not convinced that he's a good debater.
Mitt Romney is a skilled debater.
Romney is not a good debater.
Why? You know? Why is that?
Well, in Massachusetts, he was pretty much of a politically, he was a blank slate. So he could make arguments, And people would say, yeah, okay, now he's not a blank slate, and he's gone back and forth on so many issues that he's vulnerable on that. And secondly, in the Republican primary debates, his opponents largely self-destructed either during the debates or off stage. So, you know, I don't think he had to work really hard to win those debates.
Well, I watched those debates, and there was a lot of interesting theater there. And yes, some of them, like Herman Cain, had his little problems off camera and off the podium that caused him to self-destruct. But
distractions,
right. But I mean, I think both candidates, Obama in '88, Romney this year, they both grew as the debates went on. It helped you hone. And remember, a lot of the debates are about issues, and I think that some good questions will be asked, very pointed to both candidates, and that's telling to the American people where they think and what they like.
I will agree with the caller to this extent. When the other people you're debating consists of the likes of Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann and Herman Cain, that's not exactly a strong field. On the other hand, it's also true that Romney, historically, when it's been make-or-break time, when he's had to have a huge performance, he's come up big. And the best example of that was against Newt Gingrich. When Gingrich was in the lead, Romney dismantled him in the debate. And so I think that there is a history there of Romney doing what he has to do to win at the time he has to do.
It also comes back to style. We've talked about style and substance. One of the takes we haven't played from President Reagan's debate against Jimmy Carter, President Carter correctly pointed out some of the positions Reagan had taken as governor, which were pretty conservative and not in the American mainstream. And Reagan had a way of saying, I don't recall that. And he got away with it because he was good at delivering his lines. And Romney sometimes is and sometimes isn't. And so we'll see tonight which time this is, a good time for him or a bad time.
Rick, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. An email from Jim. He says, what I am disappointed by with these debates is that they don't really debate in the same way that, say, Lincoln and Douglas did. They talk past each other, not to each other. I wish the debate rules could be less strict. We talked about that early on where they quickly answer whatever question's been put forth, and then they turn back to their talking points. And that is irritating for a lot of people who really do want to hear what they think about something and how they respond to
but
that.
The good thing is tonight is an hour and a half. If you only had a half-hour debate, I mean, one of the problems with some of television, some of cable TV, is they have little two-and-a-half-minute sound bites, and it's hard to discuss the substance on some issues. So an hour and a half and having three of them, I think, is good and positive.
Yeah, and look, I mean, let's just be realistic, okay? The Lincoln-Douglas debates, which went on for 3 hours at a clip with just paragraph after paragraph after paragraph being spoken, is simply not viable in
of course not.
In today's world. And not only that, Ann, let me say one other thing. Because, you know, listeners always say, oh, you know, I'm so tired of these 30-second commercials. I want more debates. I'd like to see some substance. I gave a speech a few years ago at a major college here in the state of Ohio and had a big group of people. Some were students, some were faculty, some were regular people from the area. And that was the consensus, you know, less commercials, more debates. So I said, all right, look, we've had three debates this year. How many people here saw all three? Raise your hands. And there may maybe a third. And then I said, well, how about two? A few more hands went up. When I got to one, it was maybe a little better than half the crowd. The fact of the matter is, for all that people say they like to watch these debates, in fact, the viewership is not that big.
From a listener on Facebook, they ask, will the moderator bring up religion and Mitt Romney being a Mormon? I feel like it has not been talked about very much. I'm not sure whether that fits into domestic policy or not. I agree that the religion hasn't been brought up that much.
No, but I don't think this debate is about that. And
right.
I don't think the moderator will, and I don't think the president will either.
Let me just make this very clear, and I say this as a Democrat and a partisan Democrat. Religion has no place in this campaign or any other campaign. Article 6 of our Constitution specifically forbids a religious test for public office. And if there are people out there who believe that that's an error, they at least have the guts to be out there openly trying to repeal that. But in the meantime, religion has no place in this election.
Before we run out of time, I wanted to find out what you guys are doing tonight and tell us, Terry Casey, you're going to be at a debate party for the Columbus Metropolitan Club. Where is that and when is that?
That's going to be at Levi's. That's the deli place that's in the Chase Bank building at 3rd and Broad Street. And the Metropolitan Club's doing a little different way of twisting around how to get people thinking out of their normal partisan one way or the other as they look at and evaluate the candidates and what they say on TV.
Okay, so we'll post the Columbus Metropolitan Club website on our website, a link to that website on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And, you know, what are you going to be up to, Dale Butlin?
Well, Terry's event is going to be really boring. If your listeners want to come to have a good time tonight, come to Brewski's in Upper Arlington, where Upper Arlington Progressive Action is holding a debate party tonight. And I'll be there holding forth on that a little bit before the debate starts.
Is it fun, though, to be at a debate party when everyone agrees?
Absolutely.
I like being with a group that's bipartisan and a good variety of opinions and comments.
I'll be watching the debate with my wife, Marcia, and three dogs. So,
and I'll be watching it on Xbox with my kid, and we're going to take turns responding to things. There you have it. I hope everybody listening will take the time to watch or listen to the debate tonight, because we'll be talking about it again. We'll do a follow-up tomorrow. Join 89.7 NPR News and WOSU-TV for the first presidential debate tonight at 9 p.m. from the University of Denver. It's going to focus on domestic policy. It'll be moderated by Jim Lehrer of PBS NewsHour. And for more election coverage, visit WOSU.org/campaign2012 for the latest from NPR, PBS, and the WOSU newsroom. I want to remind folks, if you want to listen to this again or refer anyone you know to it, you can check us out at WOSU.org/allsides. We have our archives, and you can download podcasts as well. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.